Welcome to the Mile 99 interview series with your hosts, Greg Larkin, Mike Turner, and Jessica Harris. Enjoy this episode, and we'll hope to see you on the trails soon. Welcome, everybody. It's another episode of the Mile 99 interview series, and it's our 22nd episode. My name is Greg Larkin, one of the co-hosts of the Mile 99 interview series and podcast. And every episode, we talk to a different ultra runner from our community. And we like to find out kind of how they got started, you know, maybe some early life stories, how they got into running, some of the classic races they've done, things that they've been doing this year, you know, during the pandemic and all of that, and just sort of generally find out, you know, what makes them tick. We always seem to get some really good advice along the way, some good stories, that sort of thing. And just generally get to know somebody. And we hope that that is, you know, useful to the people that tune in every week. And we really enjoy bringing these stories to everybody. So as usual, I am joined by my co-hosts, Jessica Harris. How are you doing?
Hey guys, I'm doing pretty good. I have some really big news. My second kid learned how to ride her bike today.
Ooh, very exciting.
Nice.
Good news. Remind us, how old is she again?
She'll be 7 in January. You know, she's one who does things on her own time. And then today I said, hey, do you want to learn how to ride a bike? And she was like, yeah. And just like sat on it and started going.
So it just went.
Yep.
Well, as a former bike racer, you know, I'm already putting a plan together for her. So, yeah. You know, expect that to show up soon.
I guess she's bringing a bike.
Right. And Mike Turner, how are you doing?
Doing good, guys. I'm doing good, getting used to this colder weather. Actually, my youngest daughter is home from UC San Diego. So that's exciting to have her here. So as Greg was talking about, you know, we started this series when COVID first began and the country was in its first lockdown. All of races were canceled and running groups were canceled. And just, so we all were kind of like, we started interviewing our local folks in our community that we just admired and we just have liked to just chat about running and being inspired, you know, just to share their stories, just so we can stay motivated. And just, you know, so that's kind of like Greg is saying, we started this for that, you know. As he mentioned, Jessica's watching the Zoom tonight, and so you can leave your questions and comments there. We're also streaming on Facebook Live on our page, as well as the Aid Station Trails and Else page. But please leave your comments on the Zoom chat, and then Jessica will grab those. And then towards the end, we will have a Q&A for all the comments. A couple things real quick before we get going is that we want to mention a couple of friends of ours. Like you said, the Aid Station, they're good friends of ours. They're in Auburn, California. They're an actual brick and mortar running store. Go down there. They have an online website, auburnaidstation.com. You can check out all their supplies. I know they have the new Coros watches. They have all the new headlamps out there. Lots of cool stuff they have down there. Also, our other friends of ours, Monsters and Massage. Those guys keep us, especially Greg and I, they keep us actually moving and functioning, and they can save your life. So Newcastle, California, they have hours. They're open. Give them a call. Greg?
Yeah, thanks a lot for the intro. Appreciate that. And I'll just say, like, you know, as it's becoming a custom here, I'm going to have a little disclaimer here. Hopefully my cat Charlie won't go into a sneezing fit during this live interview. He often does. So if any strange sounds start coming through the microphone, I'm going to mute real quick and throw it over to one of my co-hosts to fill out the rest of the question if I'm mid-sentence or something. So just be aware. So tonight we have Eddie Schmidt. And Eddie is an Auburn area ultra runner. I'm sure a lot of people know who he is. He's really been a fixture, you know, in our community for over a decade, and he has himself like completed dozens and dozens of ultra running races. He's also a volunteer coordinator with NorCal Ultras, who puts on some of our most popular events in this area. And so he helps with, you know, coordinating the volunteers, getting the race done on the race day. And pretty much just like lending a hand, you know, anywhere he can. And I just want to, Mike and I kind of want to throw out a little story about that, that, you know, affected us. And this happened, I think it was in July, early July. I convinced Mike to join me on the second quarantine backyard ultra that was put on this year. There was one in April that I did. And then they threw another one out on mid-July or early to mid-July. And of course, hot, hot weekend. I think it was like over 100 degrees at the peak that day. Mike and I were just out there suffering. Like we were just having a rough time. And I'm trying to remember, and I was somewhat delirious, so maybe Eddie can fill us in when we start talking. But somehow he got wind of what we were doing. And he came out, brought us drinks, brought us ice, you know, just got out there and kind of helped us out with a few of the laps that we were doing. And that's just kind of I feel like the kind of guy he is, you know, and that was super helpful to me and to Mike. We eventually just crashed and burned after I don't know how many laps, but it was so appreciated to have all those great things brought out to us while we were out there doing that great race. So I want to thank you, Eddie, for doing that. And welcome to the show.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you very much. To be honest, the short time I was out there, I was suffering as well. So, I mean, you guys picked the hottest day of the year. You made you were in charge of making your own course, and you made a very tough course. So that was an incredible effort.
Yeah. You know, most normal people would say, hey, like, I'm going to go out and run as many 4.16 mile laps as I possibly can. So I'm going to pick the flattest possible course. Well,
I would have.
If you want to use your house as your main aid station and there's no flat roads and there's no flat trails around, you end up picking something that's got like 500 feet of climbing per lap. And that's not always the best for that type of race. So yeah, it was quite the day. And yeah, we definitely appreciated seeing some friendly faces out there, yours included. And I am trying to remember, did I post something on Facebook during the race or something and you saw it and decided to come out and like hang out, or I can't remember exactly.
I can't remember how I got wind of it.
Yeah. But boy, hot, hot day and lots of suffering. And I don't know, we're kind of probably wondering like, or wishing that we had those hot days again right now, but it was a good time. So yeah, we really appreciated the help. So, you know, one thing that we like to do oftentimes is just kind of, as we're getting into these interviews, is just find out a little bit about, you know, our guest and where they grew up and kind of how they got into running. And, you know, we know from reading your pre-interview questionnaire, you grew up in Michigan, so quite a ways from here. So we're just kind of interested in, you know, what, you know, obviously your early life there, how you got into running. Apparently you had a sister that ran track and cross country in high school. So just interested to hear more about that. And then eventually how you made your way out to California.
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in a little town in Michigan, right on Lake Huron. Nice, cold, windy winters. Not really interested in running as a kid, although I always felt like I could. Usually I ran when I was in trouble I'm the youngest of five kids, so I could outrun all of them. So that was the most important thing. But I did have a sister in high school that she ran, and she was the only female on the cross country team. She was the female cross country team. She ran track as well. There were females, but she was, and that impressed me. It didn't impress me enough to really run on a regular basis. I went out a couple times with her. I think I threw up after one run, but it did. It definitely planted a seed, and I definitely respected her for that, because we didn't have nobody in our family pushing us to play sports or do anything athletic. It just wasn't, we weren't really exposed to that. So she did that on her own. And then when I was 17, I joined the Navy and I met a friend of mine. There was from a town that you may have heard is kind of a running mecca, Alamosa, Colorado, where Adams State College is. And he actually went, I think, a couple of years to Adams State and ran there. Very good runner. He grew up at 7,000 feet. So I went out running with him probably a handful of time, you know, maybe five times the whole time I was in the Navy. Suffered every time. But that planted another seed. So even though my memories of running was suffering, I liked how I felt after, and something about bringing out, I mean, it was like, I thought the toughest thing you could do, really. So, and then I have to fast forward a lot of years. So what brought me out to California is my wife. So I met her when I was in the Navy, and we've got our stories differ a little bit on how that all happened, but it's a long story. But we did meet. I ended up moving, you know, we kept in touch. I ended up moving out here, you know, quite a few years after I was in the Navy, and we got married and had three kids. And we had three kids, and just, you know, I was just doing what I could to kind of raise a family. So running or anything athletic was, I played a little basketball, I will say, but I, you know, it was a few years after I had the kids, I started realizing that I wanted to take off some of the baby weight. Mm. And I was about 40 pounds heavier than I am right now. And it wasn't a good 40 pounds. And I remember, and I did have a friend at work that ran too, but I never ran with him. But again, I respected that he ran. So I started to feel heavy. And I remember a specific incident, kind of going down the stairs at work a little fast. And I felt something jiggle that really shouldn't jiggle on me. And that was the motivation, because, you know, none of my extended family are on this broadcast, but everybody in my family had weight issues. Mm-hmm. And it was at that time that I was going that direction, and I decided I just didn't want to participate. And mm-hmm. I started to think about the fastest way to lose some weight, and it was running. So I started running with that friend. His name's Rob Uchison, who now lives in Colfax. And it was August of 2005. And that was a miserable month to start running. I'm not a heat person. I'm from Michigan. I still am not a heat person, even though I should be by now. But that was a miserable, I'll say, a couple months of just starting running. But for some reason, it took that time. I was able to just do it, and pretty much been doing it ever since then. I started running in August of 2005, and I got a little exuberant about it, and I ran CIM that year. It was my first marathon. And that was not a good decision, but I got through it. I got excited. The first time I went to a race, I got so excited at the whole race environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a few years after that, about 3 years after that, I got into ultras. Did a lot of road races. I still kept doing road races after ultras.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's good to mix it up a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
If you come from that side. Well, you said your family, like, you know, hasn't or wasn't really like super athletic, it sounds like. But your sister was. So, like, how did she kind of like get into it? Do you know, like, way back?
I don't know. I think she may have had a friend that was on the track team.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
But not on the cross country team, because she was, right. she was the only woman.
So at least you did have that, like, that little inspiration there, it sounds like, and some other inspirations along the way, which is great. I mean, I think it must be how a lot of people get into these things. I mean, I got into bike racing years and years ago because my dad did it, and I really wanted to, like, do something with my dad, you know? So, like, I think people have these stories, you know, and it's always great to have somebody to look up to, and they've already sort of started blazing the way for you a little bit. So I think it sounds like you had the people, like, at the right time, you know, in the right places. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I get it with the heat too. You know, I'm a New Englander, so I'm still working on the heat training. Although now I think I am losing some of my cold resistance as well. So
You can't get cold enough for me.
I really
and still love it.
Yeah.
And I really do try. I don't totally avoid the heat. I try, but I'm never going to. Nobody is optimal in the heat, no, whether they say it is true or not.
Jessica's
maybe Jessica.
Differ. Jeez.
But I think physiologically, that's not we're not optimal, but I'm definitely not optimal.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get you on those early season and late season races, I guess.
Yes.
Hey, Eddie, I'm curious about the Navy. Where were you stationed at, and where did you find you were able to run while you were in the Navy?
I was stationed, for the most part, I was stationed on a ship out of San Diego. And yeah, just what I remember is just running around the base a few times with my friend Rick. And I do remember one time there was a mile and a half run we all had to do. And I honestly forgot about that till just now. But Rick, of course, my friend, was the fastest on the ship. And I don't remember times or anything. So we did waves. When he was done with his, he paced me. And he had just finished running an extraordinary time. And I honestly don't remember what it was, but everybody was in awe. And then he paced me. And I got the second fastest time on our ship.
Whoa.
And he was talking the whole time. And I was panting the whole time. That's what I remember. The handful of runs I did with him, he was talking the entire time. And I wasn't at a conversational pace at all. That's just how those runs were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's always demoralizing when you're running with somebody and you're absolutely just crushing. You know, you can't breathe.
Now it's a little like that with my daughter.
Oh, yeah.
But it's nice. I hear the conversation. I just can't. I can do yes or no questions. And
right. Just don't.
Still good.
Yeah. Don't make me speak in complete sentences at that point. Yeah. You mentioned Alamosa. I'm pretty sure one of our former guests, Camille Heron, you know, pretty well-known ultra-runner, relocated there like this year or something, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So yeah, it sounds like, and I've seen some of her pictures and it just looks phenomenal there. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful country. So that's
yeah, really I went cool. And visited him there once. And yeah, it's just a little town, but it's just surrounded by beautiful mountains. I think it's the, what is it? The Mount Krista, right?
Oh yeah.
But, gorgeous place. Yeah.
Very cool. So yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, I mean, you kind of got to a point like after you had kids and, you know, sort of taking care of them and lifestyle's a little different, not as active, feeling a little heavy and all of that. And, you know, I mean, that's also a big decision to like, hey, like, I'm not happy with some things. I'm just going to try some new things and move from there. And, you know, it sounds like once you made that decision, like, boom, you know, that was it. Is that sort of a theme in your life, would you say? Like, you know, once you make up your mind, you go full bore kind of into things, or how does that work with you usually?
Yeah, I think once I matured a little bit, it has been, but in my youth, definitely not. I wouldn't stick things, you know, once it got too tough, I'd be on to something else. So I'll say I had to develop that discipline. That's what I mean. I always kind of wonder if I'd started at a young age, what kind of runner I'd be. I have no idea, but I can definitely tell you I wouldn't have had the discipline to just be consistent with what you have to do to improve. So I know that for sure. So I'd say, no, I've developed discipline over time. Mm. And I think a part of the big thing that probably like a lot of other people, the big thing that kept me with running was the people I met. It's just such a positive environment and people are drawn to positive people. For most people, negative people aren't necessarily drawn to positive people, but that was a big part of, I would say, sticking with it. And particularly I can, you know, expand on how I got into ultras. That was particularly the case when I got into ultras, was the people that kept me, you know, still the best part of it all.
Yeah. 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 I mean, go ahead. Yeah. Why don't you talk about that? Cause I know for a lot of us, I mean, me personally, like I got into running and ultra running very late in life. And the people, and I'm with the people that I want to be with right now on this call, you know, like that's it. It's just, you talk to these people, you spend a lot of time on the trail with them, you get to know them. It's like your therapy too, you know? So yeah, why don't you go ahead and describe what that was like for you?
Yeah. So I, said I started running 2005 and just jumped into to do road races because that's all I was exposed to at that point. So I did, you know, everything from a mile race to marathons. And then I got my kids involved in running. We joined the Buffalo Chips running club out of Sacramento, which had the Youth Chips and real good youth program, still is to this day, still coached by the same wonderful coach, Linda Frazier. And so I got my kids involved. They didn't really, you know any better at that point. Later, they made their own decision. But I joined the Buffalo Chips, started doing road races. And then my kids, my son and daughter were running cross country in middle school in Elk Grove. That's where our kids grew up. And my daughter, Hannah, who I've spoke about, was on the same team as, I don't know if you guys know who James Barstead is. He's a longtime ultra runner, great guy, just used to put on huge training events. And I met him at a cross country meet. I saw he had a Western States, you know, it was either a Western States jacket or American River 50 jacket, but I think it was a Western States jacket. So I started talking to him and I was just, I didn't know there was anything past a marathon. So that was probably 2007. And then, actually it's probably fall of 2007. And then he convinced me, probably not just through his stories, to do the American River 50 the next year. So in 2008, I signed up for the American River 50. And first I did the Jed Smith, to Buffalo Chips race, Jed Smith 50K. That was about 2 months before that. So that was my first ultra. And really, James Barstead, you know, exposed me to that environment. And then that was the primarily the thing I did. I kept with road racing to try to just get faster. And I had a goal to do 10 CIMs in a row. And so I kept doing CIM every year while I was doing ultras as well. So I hit that goal. I did 10 CIMs.
Wow.
And just started doing ultras. And then I'll go on to Western States. So after I did American River 50, I think it was the following year, James, again, I went on the Western States training run, the one that just did the last 22 miles of the course. And I remember suffering so much in that run, just had no exposure to hills like that. I mean, American River 50, you really don't have any good climbing till the very end and you're almost done anyway. But Western, I remember that training run and I go, holy cow. When I was done, I go, holy cow, James, is the whole race like that? And he said, no, you just did the easiest part of the whole Western States 100. So that right there just scared me to death to even attempt it. I had no inclination to ever try anything like that. However, 2009, just on a whim, I went up to the finish line of Western States. We lived in Elk Grove. I went to the Pete's Coffee Bar House, got a big mocha. And because I had planned on staying up for a while, went there, stayed for the top 10 men and the top 10 women. And by the end of that period, I said, I got to do this. I just got to try this. So I ran what was at the time, you could run a 50-mile race to qualify back in those days. Mm-hmm. So I ran the Helen Klein 50 miler, which later turned into Last Chance 50 miler, a relatively easy 50 miler, qualified in that, put my name in the hat. And, you know, I was just going to stay at home and watch the lottery, the 2010 race, because, you know, but James called me up. He said, he's going there in person. I said, well, do you have to be there in person to get in? He said, no, but it's a pretty cool environment. You might like it. And I said, okay, I'll go. So I went to the lottery and still the same thing they do now for people present in the lottery. They give you a playing card and you get one extra chance to get in. Now I did not want to do the West. I thought it'd be a 3-4-5 year process to get in. I just wanted to start the process. Well, they finished the lottery. I didn't get picked. I was cool with that. And then they went to the playing cards. And the very last playing card, they drew my card.
Which, oh my gosh.
Which I think was the Joker.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I was scared to death. I was the only person that got picked that wasn't screaming, jumping up and down. So my whole training for Western States 2010 was motivated by fear. It scared the heck out of me.
Jeez.
But I did it. You know, I went through the training, had a blast through all the training. Still, to me, that's the funnest part of particularly a 100-mile race, is going through the training, building up, and watching your fitness improve. And so I did. I entered the race, and James Barstead paced me from Forest Hill to actually Highway 49, when they had a Highway 49 aid station. And then my 15-year-old daughter, Hannah, paced me from Highway 49 to the finish.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got a long story about that whole day, because there's a lot of just great memories. But I know I was behind the pace in Forest Hill by behind the 24-hour pace, which is what I was shooting for, by like 40 minutes when I left Forest Hill, and ended up squeezing in 23:55.
Yeah.
Under the wire.
I mean, you turned on the afterburners.
Well, and I'll give a lot of that thanks to my daughter, because I was really fading. I had such a hard time going down, you know, what is a beautiful downhill down to No Hands.
Mm-hmm.
But my quads were so trashed.
Mm.
So we got into the No Hands aid station. That was the only aid station that they weren't very friendly to me, because they knew I was on the bubble. Wow. And I was kind of zoning out a little bit. And I don't know who it was, but the guys told my daughter, get him out of here. You know, and she just, I think we ran across the bridge together, and then she just quit kind of slowing down when I did, and she just kept running. And I really just kind of, I couldn't let my little daughter run off into the dark by herself. So I just followed her, and she knew what she had to do to get me in. And she did. So I don't think I would have broke 24 hours. I mean, if it wasn't for James or Hannah. So it was a good experience.
So she happens to be on the call right now. Do you think she would be willing to chat here for a second?
I think
it's up to her, though. It's up to her. Yeah. I don't want to put her on the spot since we didn't plan anything here.
Okay.
But let's see. I'll just ask her real quick. Are you there, Hannah?
Hi.
Hey.
I was on the couch, so I had to go.
Oh, out. Yeah. So I totally didn't want to like put you on the spot, because we didn't rehearse anything ahead of time. But, you know, since you're here, and, you know, your dad mentioned you did an amazing pace job. Just kind of interested, like, I mean, that was now, what, 10 years ago, right? So I guess one, you know, forgive me if we're diverging here, but I am interested just kind of, you know, with that parent-child relationship, that's really interesting to me in terms of the pace relationship. So if you have, either one of you have some comments on that. And kind of just understanding, like, where were you at that time as a runner? And like, what was this experience like? Was this the first time you'd done anything like this? And how did it go? And how could you push your dad? Like, there's lots of stuff there.
For the record, I hated running when he first made me try cross country. It was not a loving relationship at first, but I look back at it with gratefulness, because it did teach me discipline. And like you said, the community was incredible from the start. With Western States, I didn't at the time, I don't think, realize how big it was, but it was pretty incredible to see it all. I didn't pace very much. I'm going to say that word loosely. But yeah, I think I used a little bit of the you're probably not going to let me run off into the dark and get eaten by a mountain lion by myself. So maybe he'll come along. Pacing wise, it's more so been the other way around. I think he, I'm sure a lot of people that have run with him know he's like a ridiculously incredible pacer. So, like he'll run things perfect and he's probably, yeah, he like negative split Western States, I'm pretty sure. So that's absurd. That was something I think he taught me going into ultras. He instilled some healthy fears of going out too fast in a 50K, which I'm grateful for. So, yeah, super fortunate to be paced by this guy.
That's awesome. Well, and I know right before we got live here and your dad was on, like he was sitting and are you still Eddie, the wall of medals behind. And he said, no, those aren't mine. Those are my daughter's. So clearly you've had some experience, over the past number of years, racing and all of that. So.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Yeah. A lot of those are, you know, in high school, they like to get, to give away medals, whether those are participation.
Hey, you know, they're impressive nonetheless, right? You're out there. but you've gone off into your own like ultra. Your dad mentioned like 2018 Salmon Falls 50K. Like you both ran that together then?
Oh yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was really great. Again, kind of that fear a little bit of like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he definitely knows what he's doing and, definitely could trust him with placing like a race in his hands. And so, it ended up being a really enjoyable experience. I don't know that it would have been like that left to my own, my own devices. So, yeah, it was a really fun one to get started on and be able to do that with him. And it was like the most perfect weather and most incredible day. So yeah, no, that was a great first ultra to do with him.
Nice. You know, Hannah, coming in at 5 hours and a couple of minutes, that's not a conservative pace. That's pretty quick, right, Eddie? I mean, that's a 5 hour K is pretty quick.
Well, yeah, she went under 5 hours. You know, she said we ran it together, but we did. Till about mile 26, where she saw, at the time, I believe, the second place woman, and she made a move there. And then I didn't see her again. She put, I think, 4 minutes on me in the last 5 miles of a 50K, and I wasn't falling apart.
Wow.
But she just disappeared. And it was a really great experience. It was a lot of pride, but I don't know if you know Salmon Falls, you got to finish and you got to run across that big levee before you get to Folsom Point.
Oh yeah.
I just got on that and we ran side by side the whole race, which is an incredible experience. I was just getting on that levee and I heard them announce her name crossing the finish line.
Whoa.
So that was kind of cool. She got out of sight. I thought for sure once I got on that levee, I'd see her, but no. So she dropped. She's making a habit of dropping the old man lately. And hey. I'm kind of proud, really.
Yeah. Well, I do want to ask, like, well, first of all, like how many other ultras and other races have you done since then, Hannah?
Ultras since then. Dad, you always know my races better than I do.
Yeah, three, right? I mean, you did. You did a 50 miler, you did another 50K, and you did a 55K.
And then the recent one we did.
Here. We did. Oh yeah, we did the relay for. Oh, that was a hot day.
Oh, I meant Three Sisters Skyline.
Oh yeah, I don't really want to talk about that.
Trying to forget.
Okay, so let's dig into that. No.
Yeah.
Well, he did a timed race running over 60 miles and then 2 weeks later came and ran a 50K. And I live in Bend, Oregon. And he came to run not an easy, it starts out with like just 9 miles uphill in a little more elevation than Auburn. And so, I mean, he asks for these things.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, just before we proceed a little bit, I do just want to also ask then, like, for each of you, like, and you can each answer this separately, what is it like to run, you know, obviously in your case, Hannah, with your dad, Eddie, with your daughter? You've mentioned a little bit, like, a lot of pride there, both directions, I think. But like, what does it mean to like, I guess, Eddie, I'll start with you. Like, you know, you've done something, you obviously appear to love the sport, the community, and being able to bring your child into that, like, what is that feeling like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's almost like better than my experience. It's like duplicating my experience and seeing it. It's just, you know, and I think there are other people that have that same thing, but I definitely get more joy out of her accomplishments and what she's done. And, but, you know, I was thankfully, you know, I have two other children. I was able to run with them at various times and I had a lot of good experiences with them. Right out of the 2015 Rio del Lago, you know, both my other kids ran in high school. My son ran all through high school track and cross country, but then just hung up his cleats. It wasn't something that he wanted to continue on through his life. And I really didn't force any of the kids to. I did encourage Hannah strongly to try cross country. And then I said after that year, be totally up to her, but she never quit. But yeah, out of the blue, my son had been out of high school a few years. I asked him if he'd pace me at Rio del Lago. And he did, you know, it's like from the couch to running the last, from Rattlesnake on, running the last 18 miles with me. And it was a great experience. And he got sick when we got done, but he stuck with me and it was a great experience. And, you know, my youngest daughter had been able to run some with her. But, you know, Hannah's just been the one that it's kind of clicked with as keeping it part of her lifestyle. And it's hugely rewarding. And, you know, the thing I'm most excited about is I'm going to be a grandpa here. So,
all right.
I'm really want to take care of myself so we can maybe do some 3-generation runs.
There you go. Now you're talking. Well, congratulations on that. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
So Hannah, yeah, like, well, congratulations. Yeah. And so, I mean, what's the feeling like, you know, having your dad kind of encouraging you as a younger person and then having these incredible experiences with him, like, what has that meant to you?
Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe, like, it's meant a lot. I mean, words probably don't describe it. It makes me emotional all the time. And, a lot of those different adventures, cause it's not just some of the races, because for the record, he has dropped me as well. What was it? Formidable. Yeah. I was with him for a whole 2 minutes. But yeah, the races or the long runs, actually the reason he jumped into the race that, we recently did in October, I think it was, is that I was, I just had found out I was pregnant and I'm like, oh, yikes. What if I fall? Because that runs in the family. And, I was a little nervous about it and he's like, okay, then I'll just do it. So that was really, really cool to have him be willing to just kind of watch over me a little bit and make sure I wasn't, doing anything dumb. But yeah, I think I've had a lot of those moments where I've been able to reflect on just how fortunate I am. I don't think a lot of people get those kinds of experiences or get hours out in the mountains with their dad. And, I definitely don't take that for granted. And, you know, those are a little bit more uncommon now that we're in different states, but, they still mean a lot. And, I don't know. It's pretty cool. It's pretty great. I think I'm pretty fortunate.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know, Mike, you probably have some thoughts on this, I'm guessing, as a dad of two incredible women.
I am very hopeful. Yes. I have two adult daughters, one's upstairs home from San Diego. So yeah, you know, it's good to getting them active and out in the woods, and just, I think just appreciating the mountains, whether you're climbing or running or hiking, just being able to appreciate the outdoors is really a valuable thing to share with your kids, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just such a great thing to see the two of you out there and yeah, having those bonding experiences, and obviously pacing at Western States is like one of those kind of like pinnacle moments, I would think, you know? So, yeah, Eddie, I mean, Silver Buckle, first attempt, 23:55. I mean, that's super impressive, you know? So, definitely. And then since then you had a couple other entries into Western States, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran it again in 2017 and then 2018, in the best shape of my life. I was so prepared for that race, took a fall right, go about a mile from the bottom of El Dorado Creek. I took a pretty good fall and then stumbled along to the river and packed it up at the river.
Really? Yeah. Well, yeah. So Hannah mentioned that falling runs in the family. So I was going to ask you about some spectacular falls you had. So maybe
that was the most spectacular, because that hurt. It hurt the most, more emotionally than even physically. But yeah, I tore my meniscus, and I had to make that hard decision of hope I don't ever have to make that again. But yeah, it was hard. But I mean, I'm just grateful to even be part of the race three times. I mean, many people might not get that chance. So it's an incredible event, and, you know, the most incredible event I've ever done. And so I hope I get another shot at it, but I'm grateful for the times I had, and it would be an honor to be in a position to pace Hannah for it someday. God willing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And yeah. And then that third generation at some point, if that all goes that way.
Yeah. At the time I had to get permission to, because I think you're supposed to, even as a pacer, you're supposed to be 18 years old. So I had to get permission from the former RD.
Interesting. So, okay. So yeah. How old at the time?
She was 15 at the time.
Wow. All right. So that's definitely a unique situation. That's great. That's incredible. Yeah. So, I mean, that last Western States then, I mean, the bottom of El Dorado all the way to the river. I mean, we're talking, 20 something miles or more, like with a torn meniscus. I mean,
I didn't know. I mean, cause I made it to the bottom on adrenaline. I really hurt my shoulder. I mean, that looked the worst. My shoulder was raw. And so I made it to the bottom on adrenaline, and they cleaned me up, and I felt like I was good to go. And it was pretty good running up to Michigan Bluff and then into Forest Hill. And then once I started the downhill out of Forest Hill, I knew something was wrong. And by the time I got to Cal One, my knee was noticeably swollen, and then kind of quit working. And then I sat at Cal 2 with ice for a long time, and then stumbled along in the night. And but
you never know what race day is going to bring, I guess, you know. Unfortunately, you know, and even if you're in the best shape of your life, these things just pop up sometimes, and you just
rocks just jump up and grab your feet.
Oh man, good story. So I know, did you not run a very long race? I don't know if it was on your own or is it your own training run, like in Auburn? Didn't you do something like a 100K around a park or something this summer? Was that?
Yeah,
I did. What was that all about?
That's just my mental state. it was so NorCal Ultras did a few virtual races this year. One of them was called Rock Your Block. And so I just picked, you could do something in your neighborhood or your block if you like. So I live just up the street. I live on Racetrack Street, just up the street from Recreation Park, which has a 0.55 mile loop around it. And so I picked that as my my block. So the event was supposed to be like a 24-hour event, but I wasn't mentally or physically prepared. So I said I'd do 12 hours. So from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., I think it was the 4th of July. I finished on the 4th of July. So I started the day before and ran around that park all night long, and had my car there as an aid station. And one of the guys I run with, Danny Murphy, met me in the morning, brought me Diet Coke and a donut that helped me finish strong. And I ran, yeah, like 120 loops of that park. And I don't know if you've ever ran that park, but there's not a lot to see. But it was just what I picked as my block, because I don't really live on, I live at the end of a street. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Relatively flat, hopefully.
It was, there was, it's deceivingly little hilly. There's little, so I think there was a, over 3,000 feet of climbing in that, but relatively flat. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we're all kind of doing our thing this year, trying to find out, you know, how we can push ourselves, you know, FKTs, these timed events, these backyard ultras, you know, whatever. I mean, it's a great testament, I think, to the imaginative nature of us as endurance athletes. You know, we're always just kind of trying to come up with these, what's some strange thing I can do today? Oh, I'm going to do 24 hours of Stagecoach repeats or something crazy. You know, who knows? I think Auburn people have that kind of screw loose in that way. Like, we're always trying to figure something out like that. But yeah, so you mentioned NorCal Ultras. Do you want to just give us a little overview of that race organization? I know you're involved with it, as we mentioned in the beginning. And kind of like what's been going on with that organization in 2020? And then what are you looking at towards 2021? Anything that you've heard or seen?
Okay. Yeah, you know, the only live event we've been able to get off the ground this year was Way to Cool back this March. But and then we tried real hard for American River 50, had to cancel that and made that into a virtual race, which was pretty successful. I think we got a lot of people doing it. It's not optimal, but... And then we've done a few other virtual races, like the one I did a Rock the Block. And there was one, the Pajama Scramble or something like that, where people ran in their pajamas and posted a picture. And there was one other this summer virtual event. And then this fall, we did the Cinna Run, which every finisher got a cinnamon roll, and the winners got a giant cinnamon roll. Very popular event. But we did that out on a ranch in Lincoln called Run to Walk, which it was the same venue I did a 12-hour race in September out there. So, you know, there it's private property. So didn't have to go through the permits and all that, but it turned out to be a very successful race. And so this Saturday, we're going to do another race out there called Frosty Run. It's a 3 and 6 mile race around the same horse ranch. It's about a mile loop that's measured out and nice dirt, nice, more compacted dirt, very easy running surface. So spread the word on that. I'll be out there working that event. So, yeah, I mean, I just started off years ago. Again, James Barstad, just he used to put on training runs. You know, back then we were able to do some pretty big training runs that were bigger than many races. But authorities kind of stopped those. And there were, I don't know, various complaints about the amount of people and that you needed permits and a lot of that stuff. So I got involved with NorCal Ultras through him, volunteering for races and helping him out on some of these training runs. And so, yeah, so still kind of been, and then March of 2019, I actually retired from my full-time job at the time. And I contacted Julie Fingar, who owns North Kyle Altars, and asked if she had something to do part-time. And at the time, her volunteer coordinator had just quit. So I kind of took over that role. And then I, you know, I'm doing whatever I can on race day to help. And so it's one of my part-time jobs.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I mean, so it sounds like you really get, you know, obviously you've enjoyed the community aspect of trail running and racing and actually being in races and all of that. And you've complimented it like a lot of people we've talked to this year. I think like the volunteering aspect of it in some ways can bring you almost more enjoyment in some cases, like, oh, it's so nice to be able to not be out there suffering and I'm helping people, like, you know, reduce their suffering and get them to the finish line and that sort of thing. So like, is that like, what do you get out of the volunteering aspect of it?
Yeah. I mean, I get out of it just, I love encouraging people because I know how they are feeling at certain times. I get inspired. I have had like really good races on my own, like following a race that I've volunteered for, just being inspired by other people in that race. And I think most ultra people I know also volunteer races. So it's a, you know, real give and take community. Yeah. For that. And if you haven't done it, highly recommend it. If I'm talking to someone that's even new to racing and hasn't tried an ultra yet, I encourage them to volunteer at one first.
Good
plan. Before they even do it. And then maybe it'll scare them away. Maybe it'll intrigue them.
It sounds like the next time I'm going to do a race, say next year, let's hope at some point, I should probably volunteer a week or two ahead of time, get that nice adrenaline surge. Yeah. And all that dopamine from seeing all these awesome people, and then I'll go out and crush it.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's similar to, like I said, when I went out to just the finish line of Western States and I got so inspired, to, you know, want to try it myself. I didn't think it'd be that soon, but yeah, just being, you know, just being around the crowd and the environment, it's pretty contagious. It's pretty motivating.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, that's really good. We hope that, you know, NorCal is going to be able to put on some stuff next year. I mean, it seems like we're heading in a good direction. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked to several folks that are associated with Western States, including their medical director, Dr. Andy Pasternak, and he's really hopeful for next year. And I think it was good to hear that in terms of all of these race organizations. So, you know, fingers crossed. I know we're all pulling for it. And I know that we want to get AR50 and all these other classic races going again. So we're hoping that they'll have a good way to do that.
Right. Hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to switch over to Jessica. I know she's been kind of checking out with what's going on with people, chatting with them and all that. And I think we have a few questions for Eddie.
We sure do. We have Clint on Zoom who has some questions about the relationship between you and Hannah and running, and where's that coming from? Go ahead, Clint.
What's up, Eddie? So my daughter's younger and she's running and I love it. And I hope she holds up with it, but how do you not coach and make her enjoy it? So I very much try not to push my daughter, but at the same time, you want to coach to get everything you can out of them. How do you find the balance to keep the joy and not be over pushing on, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that?
Great question. Okay. Yeah. I mean, ideally, cause I've coached my children in other sports too. And my advice honestly is have another coach them. And make running with you just a great experience. I've just found that to be the better thing. So I have always been, you know, willing to give Hannah all the advice in the world, but kind of similar to my wife, I learned not to give unsolicited advice. or coaching. So she knows I'm here. And she asked me things, but a lot of it, I mean, she had coaches in high school and the youth chips at the time and college coaches, and the college coaches were very knowledgeable. So I tried to not do too much coaching and try to make our runs together just an adventure.
So that leads perfectly into the second part of my question was, when we run together, I do the same thing. I try not to coach, but I help coach her cross country team. At the same time, she doesn't respond to advice that I give her, not pushing advice, but then one of the other coaches can say the same exact thing and she'll be like, yes, I should do that. And it's like, I told you that with being nice. So do you see that your kids responded the same way? Not coming from dad, no matter what your accolades, no matter what you've done, it comes from another coach rather than dad.
Many, Clint, I can empathize with you. Many occasions right. like that.
Right, right.
And then a lot of it is just she has seen what I do. And I really, when I'm signed up for a race, I take the training very seriously. I want to give myself every chance to succeed. So part of it is just her watching kind of what I do, but I've experienced that same exact thing with all my kids.
But influence is the biggest thing, and hoping, and they just enjoy running forever. Like we all do, like mentally and everything. And, taking that part out of it. Correct. Just staying with running, not competitively, but just running.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at the same time, I personally feel running should be fun 90% of the time anyway.
Absolutely.
That's what's going to keep people involved in it.
And it's why they started with us as dads, watching us have fun with our friends and thinking, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would introduce, you know, I introduced her to people, too, knowing that... that she would take their advice. I mean, she's been exposed to, you know, Megan, a local legend here, a couple times, and she's all ears with her for sure. Yeah, good luck. You'll do fine.
Thanks, Clint. And then Eddie, we're going to ask you a set of 5 rapid fire questions. So I'm going to ask you a question and you're going to, the first thing that pops in your head, you're going to answer it. Is that good? Okay.
I need a drink first.
No, right. No, nothing too serious. Well, the last one, the okay. last one is serious. Okay.
Okay.
So, okay. First one, road or trail?
Trail.
Sorry. No, first question.
I can't back up. Okay.
Favorite nutrition?
Tailwind.
Bucket list race?
Western States again.
Nice. Favorite post-race meal?
Mexican food and beer.
There you go. This is the big one. All right, you ready?
Yep.
Colored or white Christmas lights?
White.
All right.
All right, there we go. You passed. You're
taking a cue from Mr. Turner's display there.
Oh no, battle of the lights between me and Mike.
Oh, I didn't even realize that, right? Yeah.
I'm a fan, gonna have to go to be top. Clear, I'm a fan of all white, but I got children.
Yeah,
there you go.
All right, thanks so much, Eddie.
Makes total sense.
Thank you.
Well, that was great. Really appreciate your time, Eddie, talking about, you know, kind of how you got started and some of the really cool experiences you've had racing and getting that silver buckle on the first try with the last card in the lottery. Like, that's a great story right there. It's so nice to hear that. I mean, it's just, you know, because we all have that chance. If we're in that lottery, you never know, you might get that card. And then you realize, I actually do have to train for this thing.
Yeah.
that was hilarious. So thanks everybody for joining us for another episode of the Mile 99 interview series. We've really enjoyed talking with Eddie tonight. If you've enjoyed listening, we have a new website up. It's themile99interview.com. And there's a button on there and it's called Rate Show. And if you're interested and you like what we're doing, we'd really appreciate you going over to the website, clicking the Rate Show button, leaving us a review. I think there's either Apple or a Podchaser where you can leave a review. Let us know what if you like what we're doing. We can also always accept, you know, messages on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. We love to hear from our community and we love putting posts out there and engaging with all you. So keep looking for a lot more of that to come. So yeah, please go over to Facebook, find us there, the Mile 99 Interview, give us a like. We're also on Instagram, as I said, Mile 99 Interview there as well. And follow us and engage, and we love it. So next week we have the Forlorn Hope Expedition, which is currently camped out at high altitude in the snow. And there's going to be a storm tonight from what we hear. This group has started from Donner Lake this morning, and they're going to be trekking all the way over to Wheatland over the next several days, retracing a route of the historic Forlorn Hope Party that went out to rescue the Donner Party. It was a part of the Donner Party expedition that was stranded at Donner Lake, and they set out to rescue and find rescue for that group that was stranded. So we have four intrepid people out there. Three of them we have interviewed on this show before, and they are currently in progress, and we can't wait to talk to them next week. So we hope you all come back and join us for that, and keep on our feed to see some progress along the way with them. So we will adjourn now, and we'll look forward to seeing you and talking to you all next week. And in the meantime, we'll hope to see you on the trails. Take care and have a great night. Bye-bye.